I'd like to take this time just to tell you to eat my ass.
Special thanks goes out to Metallica for that music.
Yeah, we appreciate the sponsorship.
We appreciate it. They got all these deluxe box sets out now, and they're making more money now than ever. But they still have time for Dead Pit, so we appreciate that, Metallica. But welcome, everybody. This is a show that we did last year. It's definitely similar, but I think it's a lot more fun than the old-fashioned summer book club, Uncle Bill. But this is the Cruel Summer Slashback, where each week, us and everybody else watch two slasher films and talk about them and review them and everything. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably one of the shows that I look forward to the most, because a lot of these films I either haven't seen at all or I haven't seen in like 20 years, such is the case with one of these films tonight. But yeah, I always enjoy going back and watching really shitty slasher films, mostly from the 80s, it seems like.
A lot of them in the 80s, but we're going to venture out a little bit more this year, and we'll talk about that as the show goes on. But typical fashion, we do have the poll up. Everybody can get on that poll and climb on it and just have a good old time about which slasher film was your favorite of the two.
I have a feeling that poll, that is going to be really easy.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
God.
We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, Sweet 16 versus Hide and Go Shriek. It's pretty handedly on one side right now, but I won't talk about it. It's only 28 votes so far. So you guys get in there and vote. But yeah, this is interesting because these are two films I don't think that we have ever really talked about in any detail. Which that was like one of the big criterias from last year. But I think these two were actually kind of left over from last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I think, didn't we get Sweet 16? Didn't Code Red come out with that at one time? Because I remember like coming out on DVD and watching it.
Right.
Like right around the time we were doing the show.
I tried to search for it. I couldn't find it. If we did review it at some point in the show, somebody in the chat, dive a little bit further into the Patreon page and look. But I don't think that we've ever done like a full-on proper review for it. Definitely didn't do a video review or anything like that that was on YouTube. But huge time frame in the 80s of slasher movies. And there's always new ones that seemingly still just come out of nowhere that nobody knows about. But and we might take a look at a couple of those this year as well, but got a lot of people in the chat already, and we are going up against the NBA Finals. It's game 7 of the NBA Finals. It's the
Who gives
last
a shit about
game.
That game? Anybody ain't been
well, if anybody gives a shit at all, they were going to be watching that game, but for those that aren't, we appreciate it.
God, man. I'm serious, though. Like, do you ever watch the NBA anymore?
No. I used to be big into the NBA in probably the 90s, throughout the early 2000s. But, yeah, I kind of fell off, like, after that. I haven't watched it at all. How about you?
Yeah, there's just no, I never will. I haven't watched it in years because, I mean, there's really never anybody in there that I give a shit about.
Well, it's
and who does give a shit about professional basketball at this point in time? We're getting ready to go to World War III, Bulls.
Indiana Pacers and the Oklahoma City Thunder, baby. But Daryl Packer's asking, when's the Severance Summer? So I think that's, what is it, the end of next month?
20, what did he say, the 15th or the 25th? I can't remember.
I think it's like later, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's a little bit later, but everybody gets their wallets ready for that. But yeah, we appreciate everybody in the chat tonight. Antonis, the blackest Peter the world has ever seen, is in here. Uncle Bill's favorite, the tap dancing daddy, baby.
Fuck. I think that picture says everything you need to say.
Vanderhoff is in here to the dismay of Rambo. Right?
Yep.
Those two are feuding.
They're in a death grudge right now.
Adrian James, Matter Pat. Yeah, I kind of agree. That's yeah. I don't know how much we'll actually be able to get into that, but yeah, it is Pride Month, Uncle Bill. And we are reviewing Hide and Go Shriek in celebration of Pride Month.
Yep. Jackson Jack says, where's Chinese Peter? He's in here, but you can't see him.
Right. Mega Man is in here, man. Mega Man MG. Thank you. Yeah. Ryan Atkins, Justin Smith, Nubbins. Yeah, so welcome everybody. Michelle is in here. What's going on, Michelle? Jackson Jack, we're not going to talk about that. God bless Steve. We wish him well.
yeah.
But I guess we can go ahead and get started. What do we normally do? These are normally abbreviated shows. So these are like two movies, an average of 1 hour per show. We may go over a little bit. Who knows, depending on how much we talk about these. But I think we do them chronologically, right?
I mean, we can. It don't matter to me how we do them.
It really don't matter. But
in this case, yeah, that would make sense too. So we'll just do chronologically. So 1983 was the year that this classic small town slasher took place. And that is Jim Soto's Sweet 16.
Jim Soto's.
This is one of those movies that through the years I have gone back and watched maybe like three different times. And for some reason, I think it's going to get better every time, and it never does.
You forget about it a lot too, yeah. Right? So you're like, oh, did I watch this? What the hell happened in this?
Yeah, and you never remember what happens because nothing really happens in it, to be honest, until the very end, which the ending is one of my favorite, like, bizarre kind of endings too. But
it's so bizarre that I had to go back and actually rewatch it, and then I still didn't know what the fuck.
Nobody knows. So the interesting thing about this too is it's got a shit ton of people in it that I knew, like bigger kind of actors from that time period. And I got a feeling that with the exception of Bo Hopkins, who's pretty much in the entire film, most everybody else, like Patrick McNee, was probably there for like a day to do his stuff. So, I mean, Patrick McNee is so out of place in this movie. I have no idea why he's in there. He's a big part of the movie because he's the father of the lead character,
Melissa.
But he's fucking British. He's like...
Well, that could happen. I mean, he could have raised the daughter in the U.S.
But they don't explain it. There's no, like...
Yeah, he doesn't try to hide his accent at all.
No.
Which he sounds exactly like fucking Donald Pleasance, by the way. They have the exact same voice. Patrick McNee.
But everybody, a lot of other people, too, that are in this movie that I didn't need, like... Okay, so you got Bo Hopkins, you got Susan Strasberg, you've got Don Shanks.
Yeah!
A lot of people, too, that, like, I didn't recognize their
Steve
names.
Steve Anton.
Kimmel.
Steve Anton, too, which I was like, okay, I've seen, where have I seen that dude at, right? So he was the guy that played Troy, the bully, in the Goonies. Like a couple of years after this.
Yeah, he was,
This is the only other movie I've ever seen him in.
When I saw him, I was like, who the fuck is that? Like, I had to look it up because I knew it was somebody. But you're right, because he's only been in, like, really that one film. You can't really place him unless you're, like, a giant Goonies fan, too.
Big thanks to David Lenza for subscribing. Let's give him a Tatanka war chant. Yay!
Ding, 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 Buffalo. Ding, 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 anyway, ding, ding, this movie is an exploration of racism in a small town, Texas. A small Texas town, I should say.
Let's cue the piano. Melissa.
And so Melissa is a 15-year-old that arrives at this shady kind of bar at the beginning of the film. And soon she finds the locals in there. I think, and this is one of the most generic names for an older Native American, Gray Feather. It's in there.
That was the tag team partner of Chief Wahoo McDaniel back in the day.
Yeah. As are the locals, Hank and Johnny, who are big douchebags that'll play a big part coming on in the rest of the film. But Johnny is trying to, you know, romance and you know, he's a Capricorn, she's a Cancer.
He's trying to get his turtle muddy.
Yeah, he's trying to get his turtle muddy. And so for some reason he decides the best thing to do, the best option for that, is to go to an old Indian burial ground and make out. And as you know, the spirits of the old Native Americans do not take kindly to this. Neither does Dana Kimmel, who I think is her sister in this movie, I think, or her friend or something. It never really fucking explains it that well. But
Melissa,
people start mysteriously passing away through strange means, i.e. the worst on-screen kills you've ever seen in your life, where the nothing body really count happened.
Continues and climbs. And sweet.
This 16 movie would have been so much better if they would have done any kind of like gore, but they don't do anything.
It all culminates in Liz's 16th birthday party, and there's a bizarro ending that everybody is going to be reeling. They're like, what? Huh? It all comes out at once, right? It's like you're trying to fill a half gallon jug with a full gallon of milk, right? It just doesn't. I mean, you're like,
yeah, you're trying to stuff a quart bag of shit with a whole quart of shit.
Yeah, probably the most confusing ending in any slasher movie that I can think of at this point. Also, this is weird too, because this happens a lot in like early 80s horror movies and slasher movies. Melissa has a nude shower scene in this, and she's playing a 15-year-old.
Yep. It's really weird too, because all throughout this movie, she's like trying to bang everybody, and everybody's trying to bang her, but she's 15, and that's like the central premise of the fucking movie. And yeah. So I guess that was just okay for 1983. Like nowadays, you probably get fucking murdered for trying to do something like that.
The kills are mostly off screen. Yes,
that's what I'm saying.
Real quick shots.
If they would have done anything, like added any kind of like makeup effects to this movie, it would have been infinitely better. But they don't. So you just see like a knife will go up, and then you might see a little bit of blood or something, or you might see like there's one where it looks like he's stabbing a pillow. Just really bad kind of stuff, and you don't really get to see anything. So anyway, the other Native American, Don Shanks' character's name, I had to write these down because I was like, you got
Jason. Jason!
It's Jason Longshadow. That's his name. So you got old Grayfeather and Jason Long. So the premise of this movie basically is that it's like a swerve movie where they really push the idea of the red herring of the Native Americans being the killers,
right?
And but you know they're not the entire time, because you can tell the movie is trying to set you up to believe that the entire slow ass runtime of this movie, you know what they're doing. And it's like, and of course old Grayfeather gets murdered, he gets hung apparently.
Like, this is for anybody screen. Like they talk about him being hung or whatever. You hung the old man Grayfeather. Uh-huh. And I'm like, did I blink for a second? When the fuck did that happen?
That never happened. You don't see it. You don't see it. They just basically they're just like that dude comes on. And he's like, yeah, they hung him. It's like what?
What? Yeah. When? What? Was that a deleted scene?
And then there's a whole monologue that Dana Kimmel gives where she goes up to Melissa. She's like, you old fucking bitch. You killed him. You got him hanged.
In the same scene, she regrets what she says and wants to be friends with her right after she calls her a bitch and screams at her. And Melissa's like, okay, I'm sorry. Nobody likes
The dialogue in this is so bad that I had to write down some of it. So here's what she says, right? So that happens, and she literally is like, yo, fucking bitch. And then she's like, I'm sorry. Come over here, Melissa. But then she goes, Melissa goes, why do you have to be so damn tough all the time? And then she goes, why do you have to be so good?
What is she good at exactly?
The relationship.
All we know about
it's like a goody two shoes.
What is her name? Marcy in this?
Let me see. I don't even remember. I should have written down the names. Melissa's the main one that I know. Yeah,
Dana Kimmel from Friday the 13th Part 3. She's probably undoubtedly the worst actor in the entire movie. Like her shit. It's like, oh my God.
She was bad in part 3, but she's really bad in this. I think and so is pretty much everybody else, too.
I think she stands out as the worst, though. Like, Bo Hopkins, like, doesn't he always play like a fucking sheriff or something? Isn't that like in the majority
of everything? That's his gimmick. Yeah.
Oh, Sheriff Bo.
So, the premise of it is, like I said, they're throwing out this, like, people start getting killed. And the townspeople all think it's the Native Americans because, like, one of them, Old Greyfeather, happens to be in the same place at the same time as they find one of these bodies. So they think it's him. They, like, I don't know who the fuck hangs him. Like, a posse, maybe? Or, like, is it?
They don't show it. No,
they don't really, like.
They don't even, like, show, like, somebody's feet just hanging or anything. Like, you don't.
But everybody knows about it, and nobody's doing anything about it, so nobody really seems to care.
Old man in Greyfeather's ass. Hung him.
So
that brings us though, like, where are we at in this now? We're close to the end.
Like right around the middle of the film, you know, all these people all of their friends start to get killed and it starts to become like a murder mystery kind of thing. And Bo Hopkins is the sheriff of this town who is Melissa's, what the fuck is it to Melissa? I guess she's just a sheriff. Like
Bo Hopkins is. Yeah, I don't think they're any relation to Melissa. Like, that's the thing. Like, you don't know this family is new in town or what the hell the deal is, but Melissa is hot to trot. Her father's kind of strict. He's the mean. And then her mother is. That's the thing that's freaking confusing. So
that's the most confusing part of this film that I've really tried to figure it out.
I looked it up because Wikipedia gives everything away usually in their plot synopsis. If anybody hasn't seen Sweet 16, I mean, it's not like some fucking killer Dateline episode. It's not like you're going to get some sort of big unveil or something at the end. But so Joanne is the mother, right? Susan Strasberg's character. So evidently, Joanne is Trisha, Joanne's deceased sister who committed suicide in a psychiatric hospital years earlier.
So, at some point,
series of sexual abuse by her father.
Right? Yes.
Trisha murdered her father to avenge Joanne's abuse and assumed Joanne's identity after she died.
So they never really bring this up that much at all about the father or anything like that. And so when this happens, the way that it happens is that Bo Hopkins is just kind of researching shit in a library and he's looking at newspaper clippings and stuff. And he's like looking at one of like an old psychiatric hospital and somebody like that. And he's like, oh my God. And then he's got it figured out. And I'm like, what the fuck is like, what's going on? And so, cause there's really no good explanation of the backstory with the sister. Right. And
no, there's no explanation at all. Yeah, so, nothing. In fact, so like Susan Strasberg, you barely see in the movie, right?
Yeah, she's kind of roaming around like a couple of scenes. So when you find this out, you find it all out basically at one time. You don't find it out like throughout the course
from
of
her
the movie.
Dad. Yeah.
You're just like, you're trying to figure out who the killer is. and then like newsflash, if you haven't seen this movie, it's the mother, right? The Joanne character. And she's like out in the woods kneeling over this guy and she's getting ready to stab him and all this shit. And so then the, you know, the sheriff comes in, kind of breaks it up. She kills herself. And then you find out, no, she was playing, like she took her sister's identity or something like that after she fucking died in the psychiatric hospital because she couldn't withstand the it doesn't say this, but it's implied, like the sexual abuse of their father. And I'm like, what the fuck is this movie trying to be? It wants to be like anti-racism, anti-like abuse.
I don't know what it wants to be at all.
Explaining British people being in America and their daughters not having any kind of accent. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
And it's like, I think this is one of those cases too, where this is more or less like a murder mystery dressed up like a slasher movie. Right. Cause like,
yes,
the trailer, yes, it's like the artwork, everything like that. I think that it tried to fool audiences into thinking, oh, this is another one along the lines of like Friday the 13th or Halloween or something like that. It's not a good movie. This is one of those clear examples I was talking about the other night where I got this on DVD and 88 Films has a Region 2 DVD of it. This is out of print in the US and goes for a lot of money just because it's not available. Don't go out there and spend a lot of money buying this. You will be severely disappointed.
No. Hey, it's on Tubi right now. Hey, both of these movies are on Tubi, by the way. If you want to watch them.
Yeah.
I definitely recommend that you watch it on Tubi before you even think about buying either one of these.
I mean, the artwork's classic. It's very 80s. Dana Campbell's
but
terrible
now listen,
in this.
I mean, everybody's terrible. There ain't nobody in this movie that's good. The story slogs around at a pace of like a fucking snail with diabetes. There's no good death scenes. The writing is awful. The acting is awful. Everything about it.
That goddamn song, they play it over and over and over. Every time Melissa's on the screen. Ding,
yes.
Ding, 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 Melissa.
But I was dying laughing at the end of this movie, because the very end of this movie to me is the only good thing about this entire movie, because it doesn't make a lick of goddamn sense, but none of the movie does really. But when they open up the door and she just walks through it and then that song is, I was like,
Melissa,
that's amazing.
Everybody loves
that's the only
Melissa.
Good part of the movie though. 5 seconds.
I thought the opening credits of the movie was actually really good, really well done, and it makes you believe it's a movie that it totally isn't, because I guess Marcy's character is big into like murder mysteries or something like that, and she's dreaming that she's in a horror movie, and it looks kind of like Hell Night or something, but yeah, the movie is nowhere near that good. It's not good at all, actually. It's awful.
This is a movie that I swear if you watch it, you will immediately forget everything that's in it. Like right after you watch, I've watched it, like I said, at least 3 times over the years, and I will forget this whole movie by the next like.
And then here in another 4 or 5 years, probably like, yeah, let's watch this again, right?
Yeah, like, I remember this being that like, kind of good, and then it'll fool me into. It's not. I need to go back and watch this video.
Yeah, all you need to do is go back and rewatch this review, and yeah, you'll know. But
so to my future self. If you're thinking about watching this movie again and you're watching like, and you came back to this video, do not, and I repeat, do not watch this. It's not good. You think it's good. I don't know why you think it's good, but it's not. It's awful. So
it's
don't
not
even,
very
like,
good.
Bother.
And definitely, I feel sorry for the poor bastards that spend $40 or $50 on like the out of print DVD and Blu-ray. It's another example where like, I'm sure at some point in time, Vinegar Syndrome or somebody will come out with it on 4K. Actually, both of these. I can see both of these coming out in 4K at some point.
I could too.
Not just, I mean, being a Arrow or anybody could do it, I guess. But yeah, So that was Jim Sotos. Did he ever do anything else at all? Did we look? That name does not sound familiar.
Let's check out Jim Sotos. I hope not. Considering
the girl that played Melissa, I thought was okay in it. She's all right.
Okay, he actually did a. I get it now. He actually did a pretty killer exploitation film called Forced Entry.
Oh.
That came out in, like, before this, and then he did Sweet 16 '83. Then he did a movie called Hot Moves in '85.
I've heard of Hot Moves.
And then Beverly Hills Brats in 1989 was his Peter Billingsley.
I do kind of remember that. I mean, it's awful, but I do, like, it was on TV a lot, I think.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was it. That was the end of his career.
1983, and this was the end of Diana Kimmel's career pretty much too, right, as far as movies go. She might have done, like, soap operas and...
Yeah.
I don't know, but...
Maybe she did something else, but it should be. Man, she was just horrible.
I think she was the worst person in the whole movie. Not that I'm not a big Diana Kimmel fan anyway, but...
No.
The song was catchy.
The song was great. It's probably one of the best. The lead in this film, though, Alicia Shirley was her name, who plays Melissa. I was looking her up because I was like, she's a bit of all right, if you know what I mean. And, like, the only other thing I could figure out that anybody would know is she was in Aerosmith's Ragdoll video. She was, like, the main chick. And that's really it that I could, like, remember.
That's how she got the Sweet 16 role. Oh, God, she's in Ragdoll.
Yep. I think she was in that after this, though. So,
oh.
Whatever the hell that... There was like Steven Tyler was like, school.
Oh, look at that shower scene. Let's get her for Ragdoll.
So, this movie came out, though, from Code Red in 2008 on DVD. It was a director's cut. I don't know why you'd want that. But Code Red also issued a limited Blu-ray in 2015, which is that... Yeah.
The one that's worth like 50 or 60 bucks for some reason. Yeah. You Nubbins, you would be singing Melissa all day because that's all they play throughout the entire movie. Like I'm not kidding. Every scene that she's in, here's that piano. Ding, 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 ding. Melissa,
you are so sweet. Or something like that. You're a fucking killer and you got big old titties.
For a 15-year-old girl, Melissa.
Listen, she said to herself she turned 16 in like months.
Right.
That's an actual line of dialogue of that in that movie.
Right. And they're like, let's show a naked shower scene. Just be sudden up a titties.
Man.
I just can't believe, like, the world's changed that much.
There was so much of that shit in the 80s that happened, like, it's ridiculous. But this is probably one of the more egregious examples of that.
Yeah. So that was Jim Sotos, Sweet 16 from 1983. I hated it.
It's awful.
It's not a good one at all. To me, there's not much anything that interesting in it. I mean, it's cool to see Tatanka in it. Don Shanks, who... really resembled more like... he looked like a Treyu from fucking Neverending Story in this movie.
He did, you're right.
He was a really small guy, then.
He really doesn't do a whole hell of a lot in this movie either. He just shows up a couple times and...
he's in a bar scene in the beginning, whoops some redneck's ass, and that's pretty much it.
But they thought enough of him that they were like, we're going, that's Michael Myers right there. That's some bitch, that Indian from that Sweet 16, that's Michael Myers.
You could just figure a way to put his ponytail up in a mask.
It'd be killer if during his audition for that for Halloween 5, they were like, listen, we saw you as Jason Longshadow or whatever. You were killing.
I'm a big fan of your portrayal of Jason Longshadow in the Jim Sotos classic slasher, Sweet 16. I don't remember, though. Like, I think Vestron did, and I think I have the VHS of both of these. That was one that was going for crazy money back in, like, the early 2000s, too. So, like, people that are slasher fans are freaking completists, man. Like, it doesn't matter how bad these damn movies are.
No.
Yeah.
I will guarantee you this movie has, like, a cult following, too. It's god-awful and slow as hell. And nothing ever really happens, and there's no gore in it. But I guarantee there's guarantee. A group of people that love this movie.
I guarantee.
I don't know why. It just depends on when you see it, I guess, if you're younger or something.
There's a lot of people in the chat that love this movie, too. So right now we're at 60 votes. And Sweet 16 is leading 55% to 45% Hide and Go Fucking, Shrek.
That's wild to me.
That's shameful, I think.
I would have really thought that Hide and Go Shrek would run away with it just before the ending of Hide and Go Shrek.
Right.
I don't know.
We'll see. We'll catch up. We'll see if we can talk people into voting the other way. But that brings us to 1988, Uncle Bill. It's sort of the dying years of the 80s slashers, like 88 and 89, man, they really started getting pretty bad. But, you know, Hide and Go Shriek, I think, is like one of the better ones of the later slasher era. And it does things that no other slasher at the time did. Is this the first LGBTQ plus slasher movie?
No. Not really. I think that would be Sleepaway Camp, wouldn't it?
Well, the second then.
Yeah.
But this really goes further with it. Sleepaway Camp is just the end of it, the tail end. This one, you kind of realize that, hey, this is a transsexual person before the word was even a thing, right? What did they call them back then, Uncle Bill? Tell us.
No, I'm good. I was 8 years old.
Going
I don't
there.
Know what the fuck
you ain't
called.
Going there.
Nope.
Hide and Go Shriek, though. Like, you don't have any indication of what the hell you're in for with this at all.
Always remembered the cover of this film, though. For some reason, like, the cover of this film just stands out.
It is unusual cover.
But, you know, it's another one that I don't think is a particularly good film up until the very end. Just because it's better than Sweet 16, though. There's no doubt about
that. I think it is, too. So, I guess we can go ahead and talk about it. So this one follows a group of 8 friends who recently graduated from high school, Uncle Bill. Including those friends is, I think his name is Johnny in this movie. He's the only actor that I recognize in this entire movie. Sean Kattan, right? Is that how you pronounce his name?
What the hell is his name?
Karate Bad Boy, Mike Bonds, baby. Sean Kattan. Keaton, whatever. So his dad,
Sean Kanan.
Sean Kanan. There you go.
Yeah.
Keenan.
Yeah. I think that's how you pronounce it. I don't know why, because it's not spelled that way. But
anyway, his dad owns this furniture store, and he and his friends and girlfriends and everything sneak in to just have some sex on the beds and,
they just need furniture to lay on. So
play a game of hide and seek, right? They do play hide and seek in this movie.
They do.
But little do they know that somebody else is locked in the store with them. And this somebody likes dressing up in all of his victims' clothes, man or woman. He likes to flash his victims as well, show his ass and everything. And yeah, you'll see how far they go in this, I guess. I gotta watch what I say here, because you know it is 2025.
I don't even know how to talk about this movie at this point
without offending somebody, but I swear to God all this stuff happens. In this one, like, this is, and I watched this on Blu-ray, this is like still a very, very hard movie to see in a lot of, like, I don't know what the technology was when they made this movie. I think it briefly came out in theaters, right? But this movie has always been crazy dark. In fact, those assholes that are in search of darkness all the time with them fucking shitty documentaries, they should watch Hide and Go Shriek, because they'll find lots of darkness.
I found the darkness
in this movie.
Killer.
I will say this, though. The end of it, the unveil, is fucking amazing.
It's one of the best endings. I laughed for like 5 minutes straight. And I don't know if it was supposed to be funny, but like it is funny. Just, I'm sorry, but I don't know what you want me to do.
For sure. Lots of good looking women in this movie. I think all of them pretty much get naked, right? Or the majority of them.
See, that's another thing about this too. Like, it's more of like a typical slasher. Like, all of the females in it are like hot as hell, and they all show up and they all basically just at some point or another in the film get naked, and like it's set up to where the couples kind of like pair off and then they get picked off. It just is more like a typical slasher film than Sweet 16, really.
And Bunky Jones is in this too. And I know Uncle Bill was a member of the Bunky Jones fan club at one time. So
Bunky Jones,
you're excited insane. To see her. Annette Sinclair is another one that I believe she was engaged or married or dating or whatever at the time. Bob Seger, who evidently was on set for this a couple of days.
That'd be so, that thought would be so killer.
Here I am on the set again. My wife showing her titties.
He's like, yeah, I was on the set. I'd go shrink and I wrote Still the Same. One of my biggest hits. I wrote it about that fucking guy did.
Fuck it. I'd go shrink, boys. Bob Seger's sister.
Also, my cousin's in this too, man. Britton Fry.
Britton?
Yeah. She's kind of a big deal.
I was looking up the cast this though. I don't know if many of these, I think most of these girls they probably got from like strip clubs or whatever else. Like,
looks like it.
Yeah. I think that's where Bob Seger must have found his fiance. Look at the titties on that one. Come here, I want you.
He's like, one of these days, you're going to be in Hide and Go Shriek. It's going to be a fucking
we're gonna get you in
landmark
a
slasher.
Show them big titties that you got, girl. Come on.
Now, hold on 1 second. Turn the page. Yeah.
Something else that I put on here, too, because this was the Blu-ray. What now?
I was just going to say something about the idea of Bob Seger being up in this film. Well, anywhere around this film is amazing.
This was 88 films as well, Blu-ray. This is part of their slasher collection. This is another one that I think Code Red did, and it's worth like way more. Like, this movie is fun and everything, but like, this is not really a Blu-ray. This looks like shit.
It does. It really, I've got that same version too. Wait, is that the 88 films version?
88 films, yeah. Yeah, slasher classic one. Like, for instance, the movie is, like we were saying, it's dark. It is extremely dark. It looks a lot better than the VHS tape, which you really couldn't even see. Now, the bad thing is, like, the best death scene in the whole movie is not in the actual cut on Blu-ray. They've got it as a deleted scene because this was one of those VHS tapes that was released rated and unrated, right? So the rated version has like a theatrical release. So this is, I guess they took the transfer from like a 35 millimeter print or something like that. So there's a decapitation scene in this. It's by far the best death scene in the movie. It is not included in the actual movie. You have to watch it it's a VHS rip as a special feature. So that kind of sucks. But the transfer on this, man, is not good. I don't know if it could ever be any better, really, just depending on what elements exist for it. But like, it's so bad, like, and hopefully the guy's nipples are not like this, right? Sean Keenan or whatever the hell his name is, Sean, his nipples look black, like dark black in this. Did you notice this?
I didn't.
I was like, what the fuck? It looks like somebody taped Oreo cookies to his chest. I shit you not, man. I'm like, what? I mean, it has
Oreo
to be.
Oreo cookies with like candy corn.
Or the transfer was so bad. The blackest nipples the world has ever seen. Sean Keenan or whatever his name is.
So I did make some notes about this because some parts of it were so fucking hilarious. I had to. You ready?
Yeah, some lines.
So the most needless the most needless 90s dialogue ever is when they're all sitting together and they're like just talking before they go to the actual furniture store and all that. And everybody's just like, everything they say, this is like 88, right? But it's definitely going into 90s because every damn thing they say is fucking like totally rad.
And it looks, you talk about late 80s, man. It looked as late 80s, like in their bedrooms and stuff. Yeah.
Neon shit. And like, yeah, it's completely late 80s. Another funny thing too I noticed is like there's a part where they get into their car and they're leaving and all this stuff that like the soundtrack plays a song that's basically an exact rip-off of Walk This Way, but it's like on an 8-bit Nintendo.
It is. Like, they have a line Nintendo. That they say, everybody, walk this way. Like, did they think that they were going to get to use that song? Is that what I was thinking maybe? And then
they could have thought that. Really.
They just replaced it with fucking, yeah.
Did Bob Seger be like, hey, I can get Aerosmith to give you this song?
Yeah, Aerosmith will definitely let you use. That's, like, otherwise, why? Are you a gigantic Aerosmith fan and you just want to do, like, some sort of really, really, really shitty homage? Because it sounded like you said, an 8-bit NES version of Walk This Way. On a Casio keyboard.
It's like Faster's Quest version of Walk This Way. Yeah.
Some of the lines in this are hilarious, too. Like, I saved some of them here to see. What are you doing, you slime ball asshole?
Yeah.
Great dialogue.
Yeah.
But the tail end of this is really what gets it. Like, because, okay, we already meet the new employee at the furniture store, who's almost like Denver Lafferty. He lives at the bottom of the fucking the furniture store.
And cooking. You meet him and they immediately say like, oh my, like somebody hired him. He just got out of prison.
Yeah.
And he's, you know,
so he's the red herring in this one. And I think, what is his name?
Is he though? Okay.
Well, I mean,
that's the part that I've, like really struggled to figure out, because like they make it out to be that he is the good guy that's trying to, like, I don't know how to say this shit without giving away like the entire ending.
Well, we're
going to
give it away because like people, if you haven't seen Hide and Go Shriek and you think it's going to be some sort of huge investment to fucking save yourself from the twist ending. Just go ahead and click off.
So they make it, this is the part that confused me about this movie. So he, by the end of the movie, he is portrayed as being like the guy that's trying to stop the real killer from killing all these kids because he is like the lover of the real killer. And they met in prison, apparently. Wow. But the problem with that is that right directly before that scene, he's trying to strangle to death one of the kids. Like, they meet up, like, and he just starts, like, strangling the one kid, and they have to, like, beat him off of him. So is he, like, the good guy or the bad guy? I don't understand. Like, was he...
Well, I think that they started... Fred was the guy that was working at a department store. That was his name, I think, Fred. The story of Fred and Zach. But like they started attacking him first, thinking he was the killer. And then here comes, you know, hell bent for leather Zach ready to attack. And comes after
him. Hell bent for leather.
He's hell bent for destruction.
He's like, he jumps out. Hell bent for leather. He's your turbo lover, folks.
He's your turbo lover.
That fucking outfit.
Yeah. Outfit, but flamboyant
the ending
killer.
Of the movie. The ending of this movie is up there. Was some of my favorite endings to like batshit crazy endings to any movie.
No doubt.
Because
especially
it doesn't
for 1988.
Make any sense.
For 1988, the world wasn't ready, I don't think, for an ending like this.
I don't think they're, I think they're less ready now.
I'll try to explain this and be as politically correct as possible. So Zach and Fred were lovers in prison.
Uh-huh.
And they both got released evidently around the same time. And the employee at the store, Fred, explained it to the, and this is even better. We'll talk about Fred's explanation to the fucking police when it is at the end.
Yeah.
But Zach won't leave him alone. He was just wanting Fred's bird. I mean, he would not, he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Oh, Jesus.
He wanted some of that jailhouse love and outside of jail. Right. And Fred was trying to go straight. And this is what he said. He said that in his little speech at the end before he took his last breath.
He literally has a monologue at the end after he's been stabbed in the goddamn neck with a knife where he explains all this for like 5 minutes.
And then like, yeah, you know, I guess Zach is like, all these kids are coming in between you and me or whatever. And that's why he was killing them. And so Zach wasn't having none of it. He didn't want them to get a hold of his man because, you know.
No.
Another thing, too, a lot of people, we didn't talk about this. Fred is a gourmet cook, and he enjoys grilling with his with his T-fall. Some of them green onions, man. Grilled green onions. You ever had that, Uncle Bill? That's what he was cooking. That dude knows what he was doing. So Zach was excited as hell to get some of Fred's home cooking green onions and Morton salt that he had there.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, that's what he was cooking. Like, hey, have you ever fried green onions? I haven't.
No. But I know that there's probably not a better way to do it than that. Listen, anyway, though, I fucking died laughing at the very, like, one of the very last scenes in this movie is the fucking, can't even talk about it. The guy.
Fred. The killer. Uncle Fred.
Wait a minute. Which one is Fred, the one with the bondage outfit on?
Oh, no,
Fred?
Zach. Because that's Zach, the one I'm is the bondage
about.
Guy.
Okay, yeah. So Zach. So the end of the movie, out of fucking nowhere. So Fred gets a knife in his neck, and then, like, Zach jumps out, and he's, like, taunting all of them. And by the way, the way that he taunts him is he just jumps out in front of him in, like, a full leather Judas Priest outfit. And he's like, ah, 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 ah. And then he just like, runs after him, but he slips and like on blood and falls down a fucking elevator shaft.
But hey, he's a tough little son of a bitch.
It's just basically him, like, he's running. Like, oh!
Maybe that's just.
That's the end of the movie.
Maybe he didn't fall the whole way, right? But yeah, the thing that I'm laughing at.
Marked out.
Laughing at, too, is God, I'm going to call him Fred. It ain't Jeff, it's Fred. So he's telling all this shit to fucking. And it's just like what, like on South Park or something when Mr. Hankey was dying.
That's exactly.
He's like,
he does it.
I wanted to do that.
That's exactly it, man. I was like, you can't be serious, because first of all, he was stabbed through the throat with like a looking like a 10-inch knife. Then he gives this giant speech where he's like, I tried to do the right thing. And he literally goes like,
It's so killer. So for me, I mean, this is an awful movie too, but it was at least entertaining. So I can give it that. And I died laughing in a couple spots. And just the aspect of, hey, this is a transsexual killer that is dressing up as his victims. Now, they could have went a lot further with it, and they didn't. But, you know, for 1988, they went pretty far, I think.
I just can't get that image of him falling down an elevator shaft out of my head. That's one of the funniest visuals. It comes out of nowhere too, like within a split second. You think he's gonna, like, you know, go after him, and he just fucking falls dead. He's like, oh, he's dead.
Oh, it's like when Tally died. That's what it was. Not Mr. Hanky. Tally. Ah!
So. I give it a 9 out of 10 for the ending, and then a 3 for the rest of the movie.
This is one that we're clearly going to disagree with the chat, because 77 votes, which there's 114 of you guys watching right now. I don't know what the hell's wrong with you, but 56% Sweet 16, 44% Hide and Go Shriek. Like, so tell us in the chat, like, what the hell did you enjoy about Sweet 16?
Dude.
Because I didn't get it.
There's no way that that movie is, there's no way Sweet 16 is better than that, than Hide and Go Shriek. I mean, they both suck ass. Don't get me wrong. Like, they're both not good. And in terms of both of them, like, they don't have very good kills. Neither one of them, except one kill in Hide and Go Shriek. The ending is the only thing that sets them apart to me. And that ending is just one of the craziest damn things I've ever seen come out of nowhere. It's great.
It is. Yeah. You definitely wouldn't expect it. So, but yeah, I had a lot of fun with these. I always enjoy doing these shows anyway, and we are going to be back hopefully each week. If not every week, it'll be at least every other week doing these. So we did, like, I think 10 episodes last year. Hopefully we can at least match that this year for this summer, because we've got a lot of stuff planned. We got a list of stuff already ready. I think we have the next two shows planned out. Ooh, we got a $20 super chat from our buddy William. What's going on, man? 1999 super chat. Thank you, sir. I watched these two films, and in my opinion, Hide and Go Shriek had the better main antagonist and killer and better looking women. But when it comes to meat and potatoes filmmaking, Sweet 16 was a bit, I think Sweet 16 was probably better made. Technically,
had more money behind it. Yeah.
Yeah. Technically better made for sure. But yeah, it was just not that entertaining of a movie, in my opinion.
I would be curious to see what both of those movies look like completely restored. Mm-hmm. Like, just to get an idea. Like, because you can't really tell shit about Hide and Go Shriek, because it's like, can't really see what in the hell's going on.
Another thing that was interesting too, but, like, unlike a lot of slashers at the time too, so usually it's like the final girl, right? There were 4 survivors in Hide and Go Shriek, which I don't think was typical at the time at all. And the director, Skip Skolnick, what a damn name, yep. Also edited Halloween 2, which is pretty interesting. I don't know if he directed too many other movies aside from this one, but, you know, it is what it is. This
should have after this. So.
The VHS came out in 89 of this, and it had no release of any kind on DVD or Blu-ray until it was the mid-2000s at least. Probably 2007, 2008 before that one got a release either. So, what, nearly 20 years before anybody could readily check this movie out? And it is, like I said, in the In Search of Darkness douchebags, you'll find darkness in this movie still. You can go and watch the Blu-ray. You can't really see much of anything that's going on. It's very poorly made. But overall, the entertainment value for this, I definitely think that Hide and Go Shriek is the better of the two movies.
I do too. I can tell you right now, though, this is the perfect double feature to be released by somebody in like a 4K. Like, they're releasing all this crap in 4K, man. These two films would be absolutely perfect for that. I don't know why the hell.
But at the same time, I don't know if either of these would really benefit much from 4K. But, I mean, we'll see. Like, I guess it depends on what elements they add.
Somebody needs to restore them. But you're right. Like, I don't know where the elements are. They're probably not easy to find, if I was guessing. These are really obscure movies.
Yeah. Yeah. So, But yeah, I guess that is it for the episode tonight. This is episode number one of the 2025 Cruel Summer Slashback series, Uncle Bill. But we're going somewhere very interesting for the next episode, right?
Oh, yeah. So we're going to the uncharted wasteland that is 90s slasher films for this one. We're going to mix it up a bit because everything's been the 80s really so far in this show. We've thrown a lot of 80s, maybe even some 70s style like slashers, but like we haven't really done that much of the 90s. So
yeah, so this is the
that's
first
where we're headed.
Yeah, totally 90s edition. I love 90s slashers edition, I guess. Of the Cruel Summer Slashback with Invisible Maniac from 1990, and I think Popcorn was, is it 91, 92, something like that? Or they're both early 90s, I think.
It's either 90 or 91. I can't remember which, yeah.
So that'll be the second episode. And I'm definitely looking forward to checking out Invisible Maniac because I have not seen it as of yet. That's one that I bought from Vinegar Syndrome.
Oh, my God.
Way back. God, I don't know how long ago it's been. But Shannon Weary, who... sadly passed away in the early 90s as well, but she was the probably my first like favorite porn star, right? That's a big thing, right? Known as Savannah in the early 90s porn scene. Yep. This is one of her very few legit movies.
I'll tell you this about, before we even watch it, I'll tell you this about Invisible Maniac. It is one of the most nudity-heavy slasher films out there, period. And it's like, you're just like, God,
throughout
the whole film, like you can't even believe it. You'll mark out. That's all I'll
say. I think Popcorn we have seen. It's another one that's got a pretty big cult following. Synapse did the release of that one probably about 10 years ago at this point or whatever. And yeah, so that'll be interesting. I think, who is it that's in that? There's like some familiar faces that's in that. I think...
Jill Schwellen's in there.
Jill, that's who I was thinking.
She's the lead. Yeah. And then Dee Wallace is actually the mother in the movie. There's a lot of people in it that are actually pretty... We've seen them in other things, I'll put it that way.
Right.
It's a movie we've not really talked about that much either, but...
No.
Kelly Jo Minter.
It's one that... it's been a long time since I've seen it. So I was trying to look up. It's 1991 for Popcorn. So, yeah. I mean, that'll be an interesting one. Like Joshua Ellen, Dee Wallace, Derek Rydell, Mark Hurrier, who, that name sounds familiar. What else did he do? He's an actor that was in the Porky's movies. What the hell?
Oh.
Played Billy McCarty in all three Porky's movies. Okay.
Hell yeah.
Okay. All right. So that'll be an interesting one. That one's coming up next week. And we're going to try to do, like, I don't know if we can continue to do these mini themes for some of these episodes, but we've got a couple planned. And if you have any suggestions or anything as well, just throw them our way in the comments, in the chat, or whatever else. And, yeah, we will consider it, right?
Yeah, we'll consider anything. Except on Lionel.
And we're definitely in for that.
No, not if it's getting.
You are.
Oh! Not big, buddy. Look here.
Stick an eggplant in there. Come on.
What the fuck?
So, yeah.
An eggplant.
What else we got planned this week? What's coming up, Uncle Bill? Anything? I know we got to do a Dead Pit is Watching. We got to do a Dead Pit is Watching episode because I've got so much shit that I need to review, and I've been watching a lot of it. Like, we're going to do a lot of 90s comedies in an episode, and it's not really horror related at all, but fuck it. It makes for an interesting conversation, I guess.
Yeah. We're going to be doing all kinds of shit.
Yeah. And, Friday Night Lives and all that. You guys had a pretty big show the other night talking about shenanigans with physical media companies.
Yeah, I'll probably never ever let that go. I mean, that'll be a punchline for a long time for Vinegar Syndrome.
Yeah.
And so I will say this, like Imprint Films and Umbrella Entertainment and all that, they're going to fucking get all kinds of business.
I don't know. There are some people that think, you know.
You watch Traces of Death because CK mentioned it? What the fuck?
Who did?
Donnie Trumpomania.
Oh. Well, Trumpomania is running wild all over Iran, or where are they at? Iraq.
Yeah, Iran. They haven't got to Iraq yet. They're just still in Iran.
Okay. So what you going to do, brother? But, yeah, I guess that is it. Stay tuned. Follow us on Instagram and the Patreon page and everything. We do have a new review coming out tomorrow night. I want to forget that. Of Night of the Demon from 1957. It's already up on our Patreon page, but it's going to be public tomorrow night, so stay tuned for that. But I guess that is it. We will catch you guys next week. Celebrate I Love 90 Slasher Movies for the Cruel Summer Slashback, brother. God, fuck you. I want all these people to click everything they're supposed to click.
You haven't been liking them, you haven't been subscribing to them, you haven't clicked the bell or notification or anything like that.
Folks, why don't you click the like button?
Do you hate us? Do you not want to see us succeed?
Why don't you click the heart button?
Is this something that you have against our particular show?
Why don't you subscribe?
You should click on one of them buttons right now if you want us to continue to breathe greatness into your life.
There's all kinds of wonderful shirts over at shop.deadpits.com. Simply the best horror shirts on TeePublic. There are others, but they all suck. You can get some Dead Pit Radio shirts. You can get Last South on the left, The Hills Have Eyes, Texas Chainsaw. Oh, wait, you can't say Texas Chainsaw. All kinds of shirts, folks. You're going to love them. shop.deadpit.com.
Special thanks goes out to our supporters on Patreon. You know what kind of stuff you can get on Patreon, Uncle Bill, starting at only $1 a month?
What's that?
Access to every Dead Pit show since 2005. We got almost 200 fan commentaries that we've done over the decades.
Here's what other fucking Patreons do. They're like, hey, give us money, and then we'll let you see a video early that we're going to release like a fucking week from now, and then that's all we're going to give you. Meanwhile, we have a literal jukebox full of songs, thousands of reviews. I don't even know how many shows are up on there now that we've done over the years.
Hundreds of thousands.
You need to figure this out now and subscribe to us on Patreon and YouTube and Instagram. Help us to 1 million. The road to a million subscribers starts today.
So Dead Pit on Patreon.com. Join today. Tiers start at only $1, but I'd recommend at least the $10 tier.
You can do 50. The stock market's crashing around us, folks. But send